I'm actually listening to you, thinking of my own story. My story's not as good as you guys because no one died. Yeah, no, no, no. You go ahead. I want to follow something that you guys.
Okay, wait.
Yeah, no.
Wait, whoa, that statement is going to go down in less than history. Your stories aren't as good as mine because no one died. I'm sorry. That was awesome. That's less than history right there. I'm done.
Well, it's true. No one died in mine. Someone got their ass whipped, but pretty bad. Might have even wished they were dead. But no one died. So how am I going to follow up a homicide story with, you know, an ass whooping?
Good morning. Welcome to Blue Justice. This is Amanda. David said I have to kick this off this morning, so I decided I would do something different, and I added some audio clips from previous shows, but I didn't get as much as I wanted, so I don't know if we're going to play them today. We do have Ken on the line. Ken, are you there?
Hi, Amanda. How you doing?
Good morning. How are you?
Okay. Is David or Chuck available?
Nobody's on the line yet. I don't know. Chuck said he's having trouble getting up with the time change, so that may be what's going on there. But it is Fun Friday, so we're going to go ahead and run with it. David Canise will be here very soon, just in the next couple minutes, but I had to kick it off. So if you have anything you want to talk about really quick before we go into the funny stories until David gets here, that's okay too.
Okay, yeah, sure. Let's talk about Ferguson for just a second, can we?
Yeah, go ahead.
I've got, as a matter of fact, I've got three very, very humorous stories. I hope folks find them humorous. Ferguson last week signed an overreaching agreement with the Department of Justice. I can't think of a bigger thug and gang than Loretta Lynch, Eric Holder, and the Justice Department. They're going to break this poor little community for the actions of a goddamn thug ass. And they're going to have to – Ferguson finally had to sign it because they had when the Justice Department tried to shove this agreement, in quotes, down their throat, you know, they took a look at it, the members of the city council and the mayor, and said – man, this is going to cost us about $5 million a year. It's $5 million in tax dollars that this little town doesn't have. And it damn sure doesn't have the tax dollars of the functioning businesses, you know, like a CVS, one of those big O'Reilly auto parts stores, some grocery stores and things like that that were tax-generating, revenue-generating businesses, and they all went away. So once again, the Justice Department wins out because once the city of Ferguson declined to sign this agreement, the Justice Department the very next day sued them in federal district court in St. Louis, and that left. You know, you can fight these bastards in court. Now take a look at it. The Justice Department has battalions of attorneys. For those in the military, battalions about 850. And they have plurals, battalions of attorneys in a bottomless pit and a bottomless pot of taxpayer money. I don't know that the taxpayers are getting a bang for their buck on this deal, but or any of these deals. They've signed agreements with Seattle and Albuquerque in the past. So, and another thing to remember is these damn deals, they never die. They'll go on for generations. Los Angeles is still suffering under the weight of one of these federal decrees when, I don't know, cops were shot somebody in the performance of their duties, not for anything the police officer did. They come back and they find out, well, you stopped more of these folks than you did of these. And, you know, I guess you can always make up an agenda. And a little swig of water there. And this thing will just, it's going to keep perpetuating itself, and they're going to add more and more to these things. And the city of Ferguson, within a couple of years, will probably cease to exist. Let's see, what else we got to talk about? How many cops did we lose this week? 5, 6, something like that? Amanda?
I want to say, I don't know. I know we had, in 24 hours, we had, I want to say, 5 police officers shot. They all survived, thank God. But losing officers, I think every day there's been more than one that's either been viciously assaulted or been killed. I'm going to say it really seems like at least 2 a day. I don't know the exact number.
You know,
it's really been bad.
And if you look at Facebook and stuff, all of these rappers, and I don't get this rap stuff, but one guy was on there. I just checked Facebook this morning, and he said, if Trump is nominated, us niggas, that's his word, is going to
riot in the streets.
And
yep.
Did you see that? It was Joe Depp.
Yes,
or something
I did.
Like that. And,
I've been seeing both sides, you know, and my husband who listens to InfoWars is telling me, and I haven't seen this or heard this, but I've kind of been working a lot and haven't really been able to follow the news yet. But my husband was saying that if Trump wins, there's going to be riots. And people are saying if Trump doesn't win, there's going to be riots. And I'm on my Facebook feed. I am seeing, I do have one particular poster, but there are a couple, but one's really pushing it and saying that herself in particular is saying there's going to be a revolt. And this is alarming to me coming from a political activist. I don't know her well, but I know of her. I know what her position is in politics. And the fact that she's saying this, because she does have a position to speak for or to speak of, she's saying that there's going to be a revolt. And that's alarming coming from what you would consider, not seeing her personal Facebook posts, a rational person, a rational human being. And she's such an avid supporter of Trump. She's saying, you know, if it doesn't happen, if he doesn't get elected, there's going to be problems. So I don't know what's going on here. It's both sides are so polarized. And Donald Trump is thrown in the midst of this behavior of so many people that you're just like, what the hell is going on? Again, this one particular lady would seem of sound mind. She actually holds a position in politics. And seeing what I see on her Facebook feed, I'm like, holy crap, this is not cool. This is not a good thing, guys. David Shawless and Tammy are on the line too, so I want to say good morning to them really quick. Good morning, guys.
Good morning. Good morning, Ken.
Hey, good morning. Boy, that doesn't sound too enthusiastic.
I
know.
Second cup of coffee.
Oh, okay. Well, Amanda, could you message me with this lady's name? I'd like to take a look at her stuff.
Yes,
and
I sure will, and because it's public as well, so you can look at her stuff. And I'll tell you who she is, too, because, like I said, she's actually holding a position. It's very interesting to see. We expect these kind of comments from, like, the Black Lives Matter crew. We really do. We've seen it. We've seen Ferguson. We've all watched Baltimore. We've all watched just the crazy things, Chicago. We've seen what's going on that side of the issue. But for it to be coming from a Trump supporter, those kind of people make, you know, when Chicago happened, everybody was like, well, how many Trump supporters have you seen crash a Bernie Sanders rally? It doesn't happen. It doesn't happen. But then you see this, like I said, this one particular lady, you're like, oh, my God, you're making the whole movement look bad. You're making everybody who supports him look bad. These things cannot be going on. So, yes, I will send you and I will tell you who she is so that you can look at it privately. But I don't want to draw attention to it on the airwaves. I don't want to point out who she is and stuff. Yeah.
You know what? I'm of the opinion that we're in for a long, hot summer. These folks, and it all started with Ferguson, and I still say you can blame the politicians for sticking their goddamn noses in there into police work where they don't know anything that's going on. I've been involved in riot situation before. You get in, you make a couple of arrests, and you know, they get on TV and make their statement and stuff like that. But no, that you had politicians coming in and saying, "Here, just back off and don't do anything." And well, it empowered these knuckleheads, and damn sure a lot of them don't have jobs to go to because they're out there huffing and puffing and woofing around all damn day and night. Jesus, get a job, people, and add something
Absolutely.
To society. But
yeah.
You know, it all started there, and it's just running out of control. And I'm sad to say that, you know, no matter where Trump goes, no matter what he says, and he's right, and he can say, get him out. And, you know, here's something that kind of perplexing. They blame Trump, or they. I watch the Communist News Network from time to time, and they're saying, well, you know, Trump's rhetoric is making these folks do this. No, it isn't. No, it isn't. It's their own sense of, I don't know, aggrievement or, you know, whatever you want to call it, and I don't understand it. I think they're worried that in there, you know, some of these mooches and spongos are going to have to go to work and earn a paycheck, and you know, they might have to pick up trash off the side or off the highway or do some kind of menial task that needs to be done, and I say bring it on. It's just getting crazy. I get a little semi-plug in here. I was interviewed on the author show last week, and it was just published yesterday. It was on for 24 hours. If anybody wants to go there, it's authorshow.com, and then go to Ken Dye, and it'll pop up. And the interview was asking me, the lady doing the interview was asking me if I'd ever seen anything like this, and I says, you know what? I haven't seen anything like this, you know, since the 60s. And I was down in survival school in Panama, and it was right after Martin Luther King had been killed, and we knew there were riots, and, you know, we didn't have instant communications like we do today. But, you know, that was a mess, and the Chicago Convention was a mess, and all this other stuff, and it just perpetuated itself. But I was in Vietnam at the time, but my God, you know, my wife had sent me newspapers and tapes of all of the stuff that was going on. I'm concerned that, you know, unless the cops toughen up and start getting tough with these protesters and stuff, and especially in Chicago with Rahm Emanuel, you know, he wants to kiss everybody's ass instead of do what he's, you know, let the police do what they're supposed to do. And I guess Chicago, which is probably one of the largest police departments in the country, is the morale is at rock bottom. And, you know, they're having to put up with all this yang that these folks are throwing and having to not do anything. That's, you know, why even have the cops, you know. Let the animals have it and let them run wild. So what
Oh, that's like you say, Ken. You know, I think back when I was a young man back in the 60s, and when my father was on and my granddad was on the job during the riots and stuff like that. I'll tell you what, the way and the manner of the way the riots were handled back then and the way these people handle protesting now, totally different animals. They progressively become more violent and just destroying anything in their path. Where back then in the day, yeah, was there violence involved? Yeah. To the degree that there is today, no. They still had, you know, a thing of pride for their neighborhood. They didn't want to destroy their neighborhood, but they wanted to get their point across. And, yeah, there was violence involved with some individuals, and arrests were made, and, you know, people got hurt. But you didn't see, you know, whole neighborhoods going up in smoke either.
You know, David, I'm afraid that we're going to see that this summer. Whole neighborhoods going up in smoke.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sad to say you know, it's going to happen, buddy. And I think police are ill prepared for that. I'll tell you what's going to be interesting is how the police handle the Republican convention in Cleveland. And you know, that is going to be one big mess.
Oh yeah, I wouldn't want to be there
when they hit that place. So
I
don't know.
Them
hey.
Their neighborhoods are going to be destroyed. I have a feeling it's coming. It's just right now, it's just the calm before the storm.
Yeah, pretty
the calm.
Yes.
Hey, since we do have David Chalice on the line, let's get into our fun Friday, because we weren't supposed to be talking about normal stuff on Fridays. We're supposed to have positive, upbeat conversation so that we kick the weekend off on a good note. So let's do that. Let's start into our, you know, Ken says he has three stories. Chalice, do you have?
Well, I know I, Chalice, last time I.
It's easier.
Yeah. No, I can recall one here right off the top of my head. This is when I first got on the job, and my lieutenant at the time, we had a call, and he was going with me. He jumps in, we get a wagon, we jump into the wagon. He wore what I refer to as the Wild West setup, where he had the swivel holster. Ken, I'm sure you remember those. That was back in the day when automatics were not a thing. You were carrying revolvers.
Yep.
And he had that swivel holster on. Well, he gets in the wagon, and we jump out to the call, and we're doing our thing, but then he realized that he felt a little light on one side. Well, his holster came apart, and his gun was still in the wagon.
I've had that happen to me with those, yeah.
He says, why didn't you tell me? I was like, I didn't realize. I said, it's not like I was to your left. Your gun's on your right. I said, I didn't notice. But at least, you know, when we went back the way, there it is. It's sitting on the seat. He walked into a call unarmed.
Huh. Yeah, well, those it happens. Yeah, I've had that happen to me.
I never trusted them.
We had that happen here in our town. Just my husband got in a car accident in like September, and he was right by the school, and someone just backed right into his truck, his work truck, and the officer, I don't remember the whole story. My husband would have to tell it, but the officer came out, and my husband noticed. He was like, you know, your holster's empty. And the cop was like, what? And he looked down, and he was like, oh, my God. Yeah, he had no idea. He had left it in the office. So I guess that happens at all times, you know. Huh?
I remember Jimmy telling me that.
Yeah, the cop had no idea either. Like you said, a civilian noticed, hey, your holster's so deep. Whoops. I've heard a lot of stories of, you guys got to tell me if this really happened. I've heard a lot of stories of officers, for whatever reason, unholstering. Now, I can tell you from personal experience, going to the restroom when you carry a firearm on your side is an interesting, and you have to completely learn how to go to the bathroom again, how to undress yourself in the restroom. But
I've heard
a lot of incidences of officers leaving their guns in the restroom.
Have you guys ever
had that problem?
Not me, but I've known guys that have done that, and it's kind of embarrassing.
Yeah, and if it would have happened to me, I definitely would not admit it publicly.
I'm going to take that as a yes, David.
That is never, I can honestly say, has never happened to me. But I do know of one individual that I worked with. It did happen to her.
Yep. I've known guys that have done that, yeah. You go, oh, geez, you know. And I don't know, maybe they were in some deep thought there while they were in the John. How about hearing about my brother's socks?
Your brother's socks?
Yeah,
oh,
let's
okay.
go shoot for it.
All right, this is Fun Friday. When I was in a tactical unit, we rode two-man unmarked cars, and, you know, we saw a car make a, you know, real egregious traffic violation. We pull him over, and there's three guys in there. And so we got them all out of the car, searched the car, and ran them. And two guys were wanted for robbery or something, pretty heavy. And the third guy, you know, I said, okay, put your hands on top of the car. I want to make sure you don't have any weapons. And he goes, oh, man, you know, and he puts his hands up there. And I'm patting him down and get down to around the top, you know, bottom of his pant leg. And there's a bulge in there, and it's kind of soft, like, you know, a baggie of marijuana. And I lift his pant leg up, and I pull out two 1 ounce bags of marijuana. And I says, what the hell are you doing with this? And this Jamoke looks at me and says, man, that's my brother's socks, man. I'm be responsible for that shit. My brother's socks. That's the story of that one.
That's awesome.
Oh, okay.
That's awesome.
All right.
Yeah. So I've heard of stories of this kind of stuff happening in vehicles. Well, this ain't my car kind of thing. What do you tell somebody that says those ain't my socks?
Those aren't your what? Yeah, they're socks.
What do you tell
them? Yeah,
what do you
my
tell
brother's
them?
Sock. Well, you know, he gave it a shot.
What do you say to somebody who tries to pull that off? What do you say to him?
I said, come on. Man, shit. You know, that's the way some of these people think, you know, that's here's another one for you that'll, you know, how you think. When I was a rookie cop, I had locked up a drunk, and I'd taken him in to, you know, blow the box and all that stuff, and I was driving back to my district, and it was like 2-3 o'clock in the morning, and I see this car pulling out of a, you know, like a industrial area with its lights off. You know, it's at 3 o'clock in the morning. I said, well, what the hell is this? And it was one of these big old ghetto cruisers, you know, one of the big Oldsmobiles or something. And I pull the guy over and get him out of the car. And I said, what are you doing back in there? Oh, nothing, man. And let me see your driver's license. He says, I'll have my driver's license. I said, well, you mean you don't have one with you, or you don't have one because it's suspended? And he goes, you know, and he tried talking circles and stuff like this. And I knew this guy was wanted or something. And this was in a town called, it was in a town we didn't patrol, is Richmond Heights. And so this Richmond Heights car pulls up and says, hey, Willie, what are you doing? I thought you were in a joint. And and you could see this guy go, oh, man. And so I ran him. I got the guy's real name from this other beat cop from the town of Richmond Heights, and it says he's an escapee from the Missouri Penitentiary. And I by this time, you know, from jerking me around all this time, I'm a little pissed. So I go up to him. I say, "You son of a bitch!" He says, "You're an escapee from the penitentiary, aren't you?" He goes, No, man. Man, I ain't no escapee, man. I said, yeah, what do you call it? This guy goes, well, you might, it's what I refer to as an unauthorized departure. He was on an unauthorized departure. Okay. Give us one.
I'm trying to
there, huh?
I think of more devastating things right now off the top of my head than funny. I'm at a loss at the moment.
All right. Since this is Fun Friday, I got one for you. I got another one for you.
Okay, really quick. First, I want to say hi to David. David's actually here now. So, sorry, Ken, on your last story, I was trying to get David on the line, and he's here now. So, good morning, David.
Yeah, good morning, and thanks for trying to fucking blame it on me, Amanda. I appreciate it. Yeah, no, I'm only kidding. Listen, guys, I'm sorry for being late, but I had to send out some pressing emails. So, yeah, we'll just leave it at that for now. But I do apologize. I'm here. I'm listening. I didn't hear anything prior, though. So whatever story you were going to tell, Ken, this will be my first one. What are we up to?
We're up to number three on the stories. But Pittsburgh Dave had something he wanted to say, I think.
Oh, okay. Go ahead, Dave.
No, I was still thinking. I'm trying to think of something that I thought was hilarious back in the day, but right now I'm at a loss.
Okay.
I'm functioning right now.
No, well, that's never good.
Yeah. Okay, well, I got another one for you. As we're sitting here yakking, I think it's some more things. There, this one is called Howl and Ray. There was a defense attorney. We called him Howl and Ray because he'd always howl at you when you're on a stand testifying. He goes, "Oh, so you went over to my client's house? Is that right?" "Yes." "Oh, so and he was such an incompetent frickin' boob that all the cops got his business cards and they carried him in their pocket. And every time some knucklehead, they locked up some. Here, you need a good Jewish attorney." And it threw one of Howl and Ray's cards in their pocket. Howl and Ray is probably responsible for half of the prison population in the state of Missouri. But at any rate, Howl and Ray, he can't keep out of his own way. One of the narcotics guys had made a cultivation case on this one guy. The bad guy's name was Peanuts, and he went to the door as, you know, dressed up like a water guy or gas company or electric company or something, knocked on the door, and a guy opened the door. And marijuana, you can, if it's growing, you can smell it, man. And it smells like wet leaves or something. I don't know how to explain it, but, and the guy says, "Oh, okay, well, everything's fine there." And he left, went, got a search warrant, went over and made the house. So Howl and Ray was saying, "Oh, you know what the smell of marijuana is, huh?" And the detective goes, "Yes." And Howl and Ray asked him a couple other questions. He says, could you recognize the smell of marijuana if you smelled it?" And he goes, "Well, yeah, I could." And he pulls out of his inside pocket on his suit coat a bag of marijuana. And he hands it to this detective, and he says, Can you tell me if this is marijuana?" And he opens the bag and he smells it and goes, "Yes, it is, and you're under arrest." And I think he got his license yanked for what the judge stopped court right there and they took him off. They didn't handcuff him, but walked him down to the booking desk and booked him in.
You know, I think I said it on the last Friday show. If they were smart, we wouldn't have jobs.
If they were smart, what, David?
If they were smart, we wouldn't have jobs.
Yes, yes, that's true. That's true. That's very true.
Oh, I got one for you guys. It didn't involve me, but I was sitting in court waiting on some of my cases to come up. You talk about freedom of speech, okay? That just kind of sets it up. Had a traffic officer. He had a couple cases in there, and apparently he had arrested this individual, and the perpetrator of the crime sits there and says that he arrested me because I told him to go fuck himself. So the judge is sitting there in awe, and the traffic officer is saying that's not the case. They go through their whole hearing, and then the judge, you know, ultimately throws the case out, finds in favor of the individual, and so the cop is pissed. As he was walking out of the courtroom, he turned around and says, "Hey, Your Honor," and threw him the bird. He said, "Fuck you." That's all of a sudden, the courtroom went quiet, and he says, "Wow. Come here, officer. You and I need to talk." All of a sudden, everything as far as freedom of speech went right out the window.
You know, judges are awful powerful, David. You know, and
Well, he was so.
You know what? I've lost traffic cases in court, but I always got time and a half for them. So, bother me.
This guy here, he had a reputation for having a short temper. We had guys on the job that you could look at, and we referred to several of them as natural-born killers. I think you've had a few on the job that you could just take a look at that they wouldn't have a problem with it. And he was one of these individuals, and he had a short fuse. And I could almost picture, you know, him arresting this poor sap because he probably got told, you know, to go fuck off. And then when he made the statement in court and ultimately lost his case, and then he goes and tells the judge, well, if freedom of speech is getting lost, then I should be able to say the same thing to you. And it didn't work that way.
Oh, no, that's a one-way street, yeah. And some of these knuckleheads, after you go in court, and they say, I beat you. I said, didn't make any difference to me. I said, I got time and a half, you know. And, you had to take off work and come down here and sit through all of this rigmarole. And, you know,
I used to enjoy my court time, you know, and I used to try and find out exactly where I stood on the docket, and I wanted all my cases bumped to the bottom. The longer I was there, the more money I made.
Hell yeah, and you could go down and get a breakfast or lunch or something like that, you know, and, you know, judges know. Hell, that's all right.
Yeah.
Well, I used to love going to traffic court because I used to get sent down there once a week, every Wednesday, to traffic court. And I'd get the end of my shift, literally the last half hour of my shift, I'd get sent down there. And the room would be all me. I'd get my own room, and it would be lined with defendants. And I would just sit there and rock it out. I mean, sometimes two and a half hours you're there, but it is what it is. You got to pay me for my time.
Exactly.
It was awesome.
I loved it because we were guaranteed a minimum of 6 hours.
Oh, I never got that lucky. That's awesome. I got to be honest with you.
Minimum.
You know, that, yeah.
That's like working a whole day.
Yeah, we were guaranteed. Well,
time and
you
a
know,
half.
With the amount of cases, our city magistrates, when you had to go for your preliminaries and whatnot, you could be there all damn day.
That's awesome. I mean, it's not awesome, but if it's overtime, it's awesome.
Oh, yeah. I mean, a lot of times, you know, there were times where I was on shift, so was I getting anything out of it? No. I was sitting there, I was on the clock.
Right.
But the days I wasn't on the clock, I was guaranteed that, because there were days I could be there a full 8 hours.
That's awesome.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, I've sat in court. But the only time I didn't like it was when I was on a night watch. You get off at 7, you got to be in court by 9, so you go home, change clothes, and scoot on to court, and then you sit there. Then you try and grab the prosecutor and say, hey, look, I'm working a night watch. Can I get this thing going here? Oh, yeah, Ken, yeah, sure, right. And but they'll pretty much work with you, you know, as long as you have a good working relationship. Hey, David, what happened to that guy that flipped off the judge? He probably didn't stay on the job very long, did he?
Well, no, actually, he's still on the job. He's an assistant chief, as a matter of fact.
Really?
I was going to say, he should be a union delegate at least.
Yeah.
He is a chief. Now, he did not walk away from that incident unscathed. Now, he did. He was found in contempt, and he did have a nice fine to pay. And not to mention that he got his ass rooted by the brass. But, yeah, I mean, that spread like wildfire. And, you know, people actually, the officers, the only thing that did that. And they give us to do. Now, myself, would I do that? Absolutely not. Because I probably, you know, with my luck, he probably would have locked me up and put a key.
But, it happens. Well, it must not have done him too bad if he's a, you know, deputy chief, assistant chief, whatever it is.
I'll tell you what, he's a hard-nosed individual. I mean, he's cold. I mean, he just does. He has that personality. It's all the way, you know, you look at him. You can either be his best friend, but you definitely don't want him as an enemy.
Yeah, yeah. So, hey, David, how many coppers are on Pittsburgh?
Pardon me?
How many police officers are on Pittsburgh Police Department?
Well, right now they're understaffed gravely. They're only at about 1,100 right now.
Hmm. Yeah.
They're gravely understaffed. They have an academy class through now with, I think it's about 130 new recruits. And I think that's probably one of the largest classes they've had in the last 4, maybe 5 years.
Oh, yeah, that's a lot.
What, 130 recruits?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I went through an academy class with just over 1,200 people in it.
Yeah. So how many do they run in New York a year, David?
What was that, Ken?
How many academy classes they run through in New York a year?
Well, I mean, it depends, obviously, on the budget and what's approved, but generally two a year. There are a few years they only do one. They never do more. They don't double up. They'll never start an academy class. Although the new academy they built, which, you know, was a ridiculous amount of money, but they built the new one like a college campus. They don't usually run them, but now they can. It's big enough where they can start an academy class and halfway through start another one up, and the kids will never cross paths. It's that big. But as always, and as the city always manages to do, the academy was built by the best friend of someone who knows someone who paid some money, and it was built on land that's polluted. The groundwater there is polluted. Used to be an old airport, and then after that it was a dump, literally, an illegal dump, by the way. And some of the buildings can't be opened, from what I understand, because of the pollution, the mercury, the lead. It's a mess. But someone made money, though. That's what matters, right?
Yeah. You got to love the politicians. Okay. Where are we going here?
The city of Pittsburgh, like you're talking about department sizes, you know, should the city of Pittsburgh be as big as New York's? Probably not, but it should be somewhere close in comparison, considering how many people live in the city of Pittsburgh. It's a very big city. We're nowhere close in size as New York, but should have a hell of a lot more. That's why they run a lot of one-man cars. They put the smoke and mirrors routine up to make the public think that there's more officers on the street than there really are.
Yeah.
Just to clear up the NYPD, just so you know, I do love my department, but I don't want to say I hate the brass. I like the brass, most of them. Some of them are complete fucking idiots, and we'll go over that. I go over that in my interview that's airing on Saturday on Fox 5. But the majority of the real upper echelons of the department are all governed by the politics. Obviously, we all know that, right? This politician, that politician,
yeah, right.
And they put the screws and they make, hey, I'll get you this, but you got to do that and all that shit. But, you know, the NYPD is such a monster now because of all this and whatnot. We actually have active duty, you know, carry a gun on their hip cops that act as department plumbers, department electricians, department mechanics, department, you name it. We have cops that are actually paid to sit there and once a week go around and make sure every vehicle in our emergency fleet, because we have a whole separate fleet of vehicles that never gets used. Emergency fleet is about 2,000 vehicles. They have to make sure each one gets started once a week.
Are these guys on, like, light duty or something like that?
Sometimes they are, and sometimes they're political favors.
Boy, that sucks, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely it sucks. Absolutely it sucks. We also have a history of taking people who totally failed and putting them in the academy as instructors. You know, I know in my academy class we had a woman, she's no longer there. They had to hide her somewhere because she was connected. You know, she got connected politically because she was, well, they say it was, she was one of the founding members of the gay and lesbian organization, the NYPD or whatever.
Right.
But she got busted down and sent to the academy from patrol because in a fight, she turned and locked herself in a closet.
Oh,
so they said they're not going to fire her. They weren't going to hit her on cowardness and fire her, which they could do. But they put her in the academy, and above all, they put her in the phys ed department where they teach tactics and self-defense. And this is a woman who, you know, hid
gonna
from...
She's going to teach hiding in a 101.
Right.
Hey, that's a good, fun Friday story.
It's not a bad one. Not a bad
that's
one.
A good story, sure.
It wasn't intended for that, but, yeah, it worked out that way.
Yeah. She locked herself in a closet. I
wonder
if that's the same.
Now, don't get me wrong. We had another gym instructor, old guy, overweight, out of shape, bad knees. We would love when he ran because it was like a fast walk, and you'd do like 2 miles. And he was put there because he was a mess. He was a career alcoholic, and he was involved in an incident many, many moons ago where he shot a kid with a toy gun. Not knowing it was a kid with a toy gun, thinking it was a real gun, he shot the kid. He could not, he never got in any trouble, but he could never recover from it emotionally. I don't blame him. I don't blame him at all. No one does.
Nope.
But
nope.
That being said, they buried him there. I understand those circumstances. He didn't do anything wrong. I understand it. But when someone is because they know somebody, you know, listen, come on. You got guys that are involved in domestic disputes, you know, right, wrong, or indifferent. They're involved in domestic disputes. Their gun and shield is taken from them, and you punish them by saying, okay, you're in charge of fuel management. And all fuel management means is when a precinct that has gas pumps is running low on fuel, they call you, and you call the fuel company.
And it's fuel management, huh?
And they call it fuel management. So we're going to put you in charge of fuel management as a sergeant because you slapped your wife around. Now, I'm not saying, you know, if he had to go to jail, he went to jail, he got it. Whatever it was. It was handled properly that way. But why would you so-called penalize the guy by now taking him out of patrol where he's got to deal with all the bullshit, all the public, all the everything? And you're sticking him in a place where he's nowhere near anyone and doesn't have to interact with anyone, which, of course, they make friends and stay there forever. But, you know, to me it makes no sense. I'd be like, you know what, you did that? The first thing I would do as a police commissioner is I would find what precinct I could put you in that's the furthest away from your house and involves you paying a toll every day. That's where
that
I would
make life simple for him, sure.
And then I would make you stay at a precinct and do, you know, you can't do patrol if we took your guns. You're going to do the desk every day because you're going to have the risk and the liability of all those prisoners and property coming in and out that you're accountable for every single day because you deserve the headache because you're an asshole. You don't deserve a comfy job where you got nothing to worry about because you're an asshole. You deserve the liability. Maybe the guy you're going to replace who busts his ass every day and is really good and never sick and does everything and dots his I's and crosses his T's, maybe he needs that fuel management spot for a break. So he doesn't lose it. But that's I'd probably be a bad supervisor, I guess.
Well, I don't know.
You talk about people that, you know, get on the job because they know somebody, okay? It's like in Pittsburgh, they have that affirmative action bullshit. And they hired one young lady, and I'll tell you what, just because they hired her just because she was a woman, but they also hired her, and I shit you not, because of her height. She only stood maybe 4'11", weighed about 80 pounds, dripping wet with gum boots on filled with water. She was the tiniest little thing that you ever saw. I mean, when you seen her riding around in a patrol unit, all you saw from behind was a hat and knuckles if she was driving. That's all you saw. And meanwhile, her partners...
I got you beat. NYPD hired one that was so short that the individual was actually classified as a dwarf.
Oh, my God.
They were sued and got him on, and they were so small that they had that their duty weapon, they had to modify the duty weapon for this officer. This officer carried what a lot of cops carry as an off-duty, the mini Glock. They had to carry as their on-duty weapon. The real Glock did not fit in their hand. It was way too big. So,
jeez.
Yeah, I'm telling you. It was insanity. You know, and the person, by the way, the individual, I believe is no longer with the department. And from what I understand, the individual is or was suing the department.
Of course.
About discrimination.
Somebody's
there was discrimination because they weren't. None of the cars the department hired were able to be modified for them to drive.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's just like, well, this lady, she's still on the job, but she rides a desk permanently. That's all she does now because apparently she got into a situation. Now, when you go out, if you're getting, this is the way I believe, if I'm going to get my ass kicked, so are you. You're my partner, okay? Whatever happens to me is going to happen to you or you're going to save my ass, however it is, but you're involved. And I guess her partner got into a sticky situation, had to rely on her to save his ass. She couldn't. Too small, too tiny. So after that, she rode a desk from then on out.
You know, I remember when they first had women coming on the department, and I guess it was about a class or two after mine, and, you know, they came out to roll call and stuff like that, and all of these PhD eggheads would say, oh, women can defuse a situation, and women this and women that. And I'm thinking, man, what a bunch of bull. But, you know, some of them were pretty damn good, and some of them weren't working. Go to hell.
Place.
Yeah.
I'm not saying, don't get me wrong, that there isn't a place for women in the department. There is, absolutely. You know, there's a place for everyone. But you got to be a little bit smart. You can't just throw somebody who's only 4'11" and 80 pounds out to the mean streets and expect them to work miracles. It's just not going to happen.
Well, listen, I gotta agree with you. I mean, listen, there is a place for everybody. And I worked with some women that could hold their own and kick ass and outrun and whatever everybody. But I also saw some women who didn't know anything and used the flashing of cleavage to get everything they wanted from the bosses, took the job, got straight to a desk, and rode a boss's coattails, not to mention maybe something else, all the way up the chain. That being said, it's a dangerous precedent. It happened in New York. They did it for females with the fire department. And I recently read, and I don't know if it's policy yet or soon to be policy, city council's pushing it. The department's kind of on the fence agreeing about it. Getting rid of physical standards for females to increase their numbers. Now, I don't have an issue. I do not have an issue with the fact that women have to do less than men. I mean, I got a little bit of an issue, but they're doing something. If I got to lift 100% my own body weight and you only have to lift 80% yours in a bench press, fine, whatever. I understand the bodies are different, the dynamics are different. I'll give it to you. The race, the speed that I have to do my mile and a half run is a little faster than what you have to do, fine, I'll give it to you, it is what it is. But when you're going to get rid of it or make it seriously different, you know, when you're talking about I have to drag a 150-pound dummy and you don't, when I have to go over a 5-foot wall, you don't, when I have to do a run and you don't, that's fucking dangerous. And
yeah,
that's
yes,
what the department did. The fire department did it recently, and you know, the problem is, and by the way, all the women that are turning out, and I know plenty of firefighters, fire supervisors, and whatever, and they've all said, and the unions come out and said it, they all fucking suck, every single one of them. Men are refusing to work with them. They're dangerous. You have to be able to hold your own, because when another fireman goes down, or with a cop goes down, you've got to be able to pull your weight and help them out. You can't go, oh, I'm a woman, I didn't. You know, whatever, you got to be able to fucking do it. So
this is before I even got on the job. I was testing to get on the job. And at that time, I can remember probably, there was probably about 5,000 people that were testing for only maybe 100 positions. And I'm standing there with and this girl behind me. The first thing out of their mouth was, hey, I can't get this job. My hair is going to look so cute under that adorable hat. I was like, what the fuck? I said, this girl's going to be fucking hired over me? Because she wants to look cute in her little hat? I was like, you got to be fucking kidding me.
It happens. It's out there. It is what it is. You know,
yeah,
and
it
I
is.
There was a video I saw last night, and it's funny you bring it up. Never served in the military, but it was a military video. One of my buddies put it up. He's a retired Marine. My buddy Marcello, great guy. He puts this video up. I'm pretty sure it was him anyway. And it was like an Army fail video. And it was a training exercise. And it was a woman, you know, they're in the pit, they're in the circle, they have the sticks to hit each other with, the headgear and the chest protectors. And it's a woman and a guy. And you can't hear the audio, but you see the instructors looking off the screen where this guy comes from and talking to him. And he's probably saying, like, listen, we're all on the same team, take it easy, we're integrating, whatever, 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 you know, do what you got to
yep.
do. And then off the screen, they say go, and the girl gets into her stance with a stick, and she's ready, like, to whatever, and you see this blur come off the screen, and it's the guy. And the guy's, like, gotta by good 60 pounds, and he's solid as could be. He hits her once under the chin with the Q-tip and
yeah.
sets her fucking flying into the stands and then jumps on top of her and starts wailing on her. Two of the instructors and a bunch of guys from the stand dive on him and push him off. And, you know, and then it said, while the video played, it said underneath, equal rights for all, and that was it. You know, it was just a smiley face. And I'm like, you know what, that's exactly what it is, though. You have to be able to take this. You don't have enough.
That's going to happen at some point. Somebody's going to wind up getting shot or something, and somebody's going to have to pull them out of the line of fire or pull them somewhere, and it ain't going to happen. I'd like to hear the politicians explain that one. You know, I saw something about the fire department up there not doing away with their physical fitness stuff. And I think they even sent a couple of females back to paramedics or something, and then they brought them back up after the physical requirements were done away with. But, David, that's not right, and it's going to come back and bite them in the ass. And it's going to come back and bite them this summer.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you know what? Listen. And it's no different than anything else. It's like the same as saying, it could be any job. It could be fucking doctors. If you're not a fit, qualified doctor, and a hospital puts you in charge of a certain department or ward or whatever to create and draft, procedures and policy and everything else, it's a liability. You're only going to put the best of the best in those positions. That's why they're there, and that's why they're the best. Not every, you know, but, again, we're in that society where, everyone has a right to be what they want to be. I mean, for Christ's fucking sakes, I want to be a fucking astronaut. No one's
Do
fucking,
you?
No
what
one's
you want to be when you grow up?
On me and saying, go ahead.
I always wanted to be a cowboy, but I guess that's out the window.
You got to sue. That's what you got to do. You got to sue.
Yeah, you got to sue. And with all these attorneys out there, my God, you know, the suits are flying left and right. You know, somebody looks at somebody the wrong way, and
well, that's
know.
Just this isn't within the police department. But a very good friend of mine who sits on the Pittsburgh Fire Department. When you talk about men and women being able to hold your own. They had hired a woman. It ended up going to his station house, and she was a frail little thing, but because of quotas, she got hired. And my buddy, he's just like, I don't have any faith in you. And he come right out and told her that. And she said that she could hold her own and do anything that any man could do. He ended up getting up out of his chair, walked out to the sidewalk, laid down. He says, okay, help me. I'm not helping you. You help me. She couldn't lift him. She couldn't get him into a fireman's carry. She couldn't do nothing. And he's not a big man to begin with. He's probably only 180 pounds. She couldn't move him. He says, point made, and then got up and walked back into the station. And here he ended up, she sued him because of it.
Yep, yep.
But I would have told her, you can do anything like I can do. Plant your feet flat on the floor and piss on that wall.
Ooh. Now, that'll probably get you sued, too.
Yeah, but you know what? I was never, listen, that's why I do what I do, and that's why I'm doing what I'm doing. I was never one for being PC. Fuck it. I don't give a shit. It is what it is. And that, to me, that's half the problem. And you know what? It brings up another good point. An article I read not a terrible amount of time ago, but I don't remember when, about a woman who went to school, no, that's not the story, because women can go to school. She wanted to be a nurse. So no big deal. She goes to her college. She takes her college class. She then goes off to nursing school, and she takes her nursing class. She cannot pass the final. Because she can't pass the final, she can't get a job. The school lets her repeat whatever she has to repeat. She fails. Lets her repeat again. She fails. Eventually, they say goodbye. She sues the school, this nursing program, saying they made it too competitive, created an uncomfortable environment where she was plagued with anxiety.
Oh.
And because of that, was unable to graduate and therefore unable to get a job. And she wanted to sue them for the financial reimbursements for the rest of her life in what her job would have given her had she passed. So, you know, the school did respond properly in saying they're going to challenge it because we've done everything, including tutoring, to try to get you to pass, and we offer. You just are an idiot. Plain and simple. And that's what it is. We're encouraging too many people to do too many things. At some point, I just want to know when people actually have to become responsible for what it is that they're actually doing.
What was the outcome of the gal that sued the school? Do you know?
I don't know what happened to it. And when the story was released, the story was out there because it was introduced to court. And it was the school's response to it and the details of the lawsuit. So it hadn't even gone anywhere yet. So I don't think it's handled, if I had to guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Well, you know, at some point we got to draw a line in the sand and start standing up to these. I think New York City's good for caving.
New York City caves for everything. New York City sucks.
You know, it's no different than Pittsburgh. They caved to, you know, a lot of for years, even when before I even got on the job and tested. I shit you not, that the entry exam to take to get into the police academy, you would go in there as an educated individual. You might have, you know, 18 years of college behind you. You go in and look at this test and you start reading it, and you're like, wow, see Dick run. See Jane push Dick. I mean, it was based on an eighth grade reading level. That's what it was, because they said that they were looking for candidates, but they couldn't get them because they couldn't pass the test, so they had to lower the standards to an eighth grade reading level to get candidates. I was like, are you shitting me?
Yeah.
It wasn't only in the year 2000 that they revamped the test. So for how many years they were guessed that was on an level just so they could get different various minorities, whether they be black, Hispanic, or whoever. That's what they're based on. That's pretty sad.
I just got to ask a quick question. Is anyone else hearing the audio break up?
Yes, I am. I think it's Pittsburgh Dave's, isn't it?
I'm wondering if you're hearing it. I thought maybe it was just me, but if you're hearing it too, your audio.
Yeah, I'm hearing it as well.
Okay, so maybe it isn't you. It could be interference on your on your call-in, I guess.
Could be.
I did understand what you were saying, and I heard way more than enough to know what you were saying. You know, you see that everywhere. The drive to get minority by anything, not even by race, anything that they deem minority, figures to represent the community you're, you know, enforcing, protecting, teaching, whatever, is so high, and it doesn't make sense. You're willing to lower your standards. You're willing to lower your image as a whatever you are, your department, your agency, your whatever, to make this. Where's the benefit? Where is the benefit in dropping your standards to get people in? You're not there. There is no benefit.
Exactly.
No, there isn't. And that's the kind of stuff that gets folks hurt or killed.
Yes.
So.
But the politicians don't see it, because that's also the stuff. When it happens, it's only a matter of time till it has. There's been cases that you could guess or whatever. It's nothing that I know of that's been pushed. You're the politician behind that, and that happens. Your political career is over. I'd rather have political a political roadblock or bumpy road or weather a political storm, because I won't back it. And I say, well, fuck with the minorities. You get the score and you get the job. That's what it is. It's the score. You have to pass. I'm not getting rid. I'm not going to say, oh, you know, you can pass now with a 40 if you want, so that I can get a pool of more minorities. It doesn't work that way, because when someone gets hurt, it's on me.
So, yeah, those are the ones that wind up being bosses, too.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes, they do.
Unfortunately. Hey, listen, time's running out, and I got to run. Hey, David, would you post your interview on the site when it's done?
Oh, absolutely. It'll definitely be up. There's going to be a radio interview, and then there's a television interview. They'll both be put up.
Okay. Be looking forward to them. Hey, next Fun Friday, everybody have three jokes or funny stories. Okay? Deal?
Deal. I'm up for it.
Okay, I'm going to end.
Okay, we'll see you guys. Good show. Take care.
Good show.
Take
care. Bye-bye.
I'm going to end on this note, guys.
Thank you very much for the love and the support you guys always have for me and for the group. And the reality is this group would be nothing without you guys. It would just be an empty room and an empty void in my heart. But, you know, it was a dream that I came up with. But truly, this dream wasn't born until you guys started coming in and showing your love and support for what I'm trying to do, and I guess what we're all trying to do. And I thank you for rallying behind me when ass hats and ass clowns and, you know, whatnot pop up here and there and do wrong and, you know, whatnot. But, you know, listen, there's twisted individuals everywhere. And that being said, that's why you guys are the best. That's why I love you guys. God bless all of you. And, you know, we're here for all of you.
That's true.
David,
okay,
we appreciate
so, that was an old audio clip that I found, and I wanted to end it on that note. So I will talk to you guys later.
Later. Thank you, guys.